Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Wednesday, June 22nd. I'm Desiree Frazier, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, we talk with a lobbyist tasked with advancing pro-LGBTQ legislation in Mississippi. Then, one Gulf Coast scientist argues the Mississippi River needs a national lab. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. June is Pride Month in the U.S. It's a time to reflect not only on the ongoing social battle for LGBTQ equality, but also the legislative battles. That's according to Rob Hill, who's Mississippi State Director for the Human Rights Campaign. He speaks with MPB's Kobe Vance.
This is an important time of the year. Obviously, this is, you know, federally recognized as June is federally recognized as Pride Month. It means a lot for LGBTQ people to be able to celebrate who they are because we live still in a country where we are being attacked by legislative folks all around the country. So it's important for a community that still does not have full protections, that is still being attacked physically and legislatively, to be able to come together and celebrate who we are as people and how much we contribute to our country and the world.
Looking back, where has Mississippi come in the past few decades when it comes to the rights of LGBTQ plus people?
Well, we've actually made some, we've had some bad things happen, and we've had some good things happen. As a result of any kind of progress that we've made in the country, very often we see an onslaught of legislation targeting or LGBTQ plus people or trying to further disenfranchise. So, you know, in 2016, after the Obergefell decision that made marriage equality the law of the land, we saw in Mississippi legislation, HB 1523, which was intended to among other things, to allow county clerks to be able to deny a marriage license to a same-sex couple. In 21 session, we saw the same thing happen as a result of the 2020 Bostock decision at the Supreme Court that made discrimination in the workplace illegal. So we've seen, you know, other efforts to, again, try to further disenfranchise the LGBTQ plus community. But we have seen some good things in Mississippi. At the state level, we've had bipartisan support and bipartisan sponsors for hate crime legislation that would add sexual orientation and gender identity and disability to our state hate crime law. And we've seen five cities over the past 7 years pass fully inclusive, comprehensive non-discrimination ordinances, which prohibit discrimination in the workplace, housing, and in places of public accommodation. So while we've had some struggles, we've had some successes as well.
Some of the most recent legal battles that have been seen, especially here in Mississippi, have to do with trans Mississippians, and especially those that are younger and are in athletics. I remember in the 2021 legislative session, we saw bills that came out that prevented young trans youth from participating in women's sports in schools.
Yeah.
What are some of the major things that are continuing to happen in Mississippi that are affecting LGBTQ plus people?
Well, the anti-trans athlete bill was a solution looking for a problem that does not exist. And it was, you know, again, it was based on animus and fear of trans people. And while it targeted trans youth, it was intended to, it was targeting the whole of the trans community and the LGBTQ plus community. We have seen consistently over the last 3 years, legislation that has been introduced to prohibit and even criminalize care for trans minors, which, you know, the reality is that any kind of care to trans minors is very limited until someone is 18 or older. But we've been able to kill that bill each time. But we know that we're going to deal with this again. And we've seen just this year, we've seen, you know, we're tracking around 350 anti-LGBTQ bills, the bulk of those being bills that, you know, they're bathroom bills or anti-trans athlete bills or target or criminalize trans care to minors. So while those have passed, we've also been able to kill a lot of those as well in legislatures. But we know that, again, while we have legislators in Mississippi that consistently introduce bad legislation, harmful legislation, and again, that legislation is not only harmful from a policy perspective, it also fuels the kind of animus that leads to violence very often. And so these kind of bills can have devastating effects, even those that don't pass. The fact that people are still attempting it, you know, definitely legitimizes some of the hateful things that go on, the hateful people.
What do you think could be done on the inverse of that, trying to find bills that could improve the lives of trans or any member of the LGBTQ plus community here in Mississippi?
Well, you know, I think we should pass a hate crime bill, an updated hate crime bill that you know, includes gender identity and sexual orientation in our state hate crime law. You know, and that's important because consistently every year, trans people are targeted and have been murdered in Mississippi. And all of those have been trans people of color, mostly trans Black women. And so a lot of those crimes, a lot of those murders have been unsolved, but they've also not been treated as hate crimes because we don't have a state hate crime law. So, you know, that can have a positive effect for the trans community. And what we need to do is the state needs to have a state a civil rights bill that is comprehensive of all of those included in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, but also sexual orientation and gender identity, to make it explicit that LGBTQ plus people and everybody should never experience discrimination in any form. That's a very positive thing that they could do. It's been introduced every year and for the past 4 or 5 years, but it's not made it out of committee.
With everything that's happened to the LGBTQ plus community here in Mississippi, why do you think it's important that they take time to celebrate Pride Month?
Again, you know, we've just seen so much, so many attacks this year, you know, on LGBTQ people, and it's certainly on LGBTQ, on trans youth. And so, you know, because of that, you know, we need to take time to celebrate who we are when we have people who are supposed to be there to protect us and make us feel safe doing the exact opposite. So it's important to come together, you know, because, you know, LGBTQ people contribute so much to our state, so much to our culture, so much to our world. And yet we still don't have the same protections as everybody else has in our country. So it's important to stop and think about the contributions, celebrate that, and also be there for one another as a community that is still, you know, continues to be under attack.
Stepping outside of the legislature, I wanted to ask, what do you think could be done to reduce biases towards the LGBTQ plus community in Mississippi, in the community?
One of the things I consistently hear from people when I speak at a community around the state is this desire to help. What can I do? And I always say to folks, you know, you can be an ally. They're not an LGBTQ plus person generally. And so I say it's just as important for you to come out as an ally, whether that's, you know, at the workplace, whether that's at church, whether that's in the grocery store, to make sure that people, make sure that you let people know that when you hear something that is transphobic or homophobic, that you don't agree with it, it's wrong, and that you have loved ones and friends and coworkers who are LGBTQ plus. You know, we need folks to be able to stand up and be that advocate wherever they are, not just at the legislature, but again, wherever you are in the world. Because when people tell their stories as LGBTQ plus people or as an ally, it's the number one way that changes hearts and minds around our issues.
Rob Hill is the Mississippi State Director for the Human Rights Campaign. Rob, thank you for talking with us today.
It's good to be with you, Kobe.
Coming up, one Gulf Coast scientist argues the Mississippi River needs a national lab. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Can a river be too big to fail? According to John Sabo, the answer is yes. Sabo is the director of the Bywater Institute at Tulane University. He writes in a recent piece in Forbes that the Mississippi River is simply too critical to receive anything less than the full attention of the scientific community. Sabo speaks with Mississippi Edition producer Rob Lane.
If you think about the Mississippi, it's the big kahuna of all rivers in North America. It sources water from over 30 states in the United States and two provinces from Canada. It's the pathway of commerce from the Gulf of Mexico and from the global economy into the heartland of the United States, and also hosts likely the supply chain for a great majority of the businesses in the United States, including food and agriculture.
Now, I'm curious about that. I think some people may hear that description and think that it sounds like something out of a Mark Twain novel. You know, I think some people hold the impression that understanding the Mississippi as a major economic engine is somewhat outdated. Can you clear that up a little?
I mean, I think the core place that the core thing that we need to remember is that great majority of ag happens in the heartland, and so our food system is based in the heartland, and that's part and parcel with some of the issues that we have in the Mississippi River, and in particular with the dead zone in the Gulf, but it's vital to our economy to have that. A whole host of big companies depend on that supply chain to develop their products, outside of, many, many years later, past Mark Twain, it's now the major thoroughfare for global goods into the heartland.
And so can you describe, as you see them, sort of the host of threats that are simultaneously descending upon and in some cases are already profoundly affecting the river?
Yeah, well, we have eutrophication in nearshore waters in the Gulf of Mexico that leads to a dead zone that this year is going to be above average, even though it's predicted to be average. And that dead zone has significant consequences on nearshore fisheries and hence the economy of many of Gulf states that depend on that fishery, not just for food production, but also for sports fishing.
And so it sounds like you're describing a river that is on some level poisonous and could be becoming more so.
Well, let's not use the word poison. Let's use the word dysfunctional. You know, it serves many purposes. And I think when we think about the consequences of harnessing the river at scale, we have to think about it systemically and systematically. And I think that's one thing that we're not doing very well. We're measuring it. We know how to source attribution of some of the challenges, but we don't know how to fix it. And that's very much what a national lab would do, is pilot those interventions that need to be taken in order to right the course, in order to get the river back to a functional river and coastline without having significant impacts on what is the central nervous system of commerce, I think, in the United States.
So you mentioned there your big idea to sort of fix the Mississippi is to establish a national lab to study it. What would that look like?
Well, we have a model for it, right? We have the national labs, which are funded by the Department of Energy, and they were funded at a time when we needed solutions to both energy and for the military, and they provided those solutions. And the reason they provide those solutions is because they're built at a scale that no other entity in the United States can handle. in terms of R&D funding and in terms of use-inspired and applied R&D funding that's meant to enhance national security and national well-being. And so I think it's at that scale that we need to act. And the reason why the Mississippi is a great place to start is because it derives water from, you know, three-fifths of the states of the United States. So it represents a majority and also the core, the heartland. The challenges, like, I think there are many more than just eutrophication, right? There's also coastal land loss and erosion. There's channelization, which is really important for shipping, but has its impacts on lateral habitats and green infrastructure that could also help with flood control. And then there's the flood side of the issue, which we're seeing in Yellowstone right now, which is a tributary to the Mississippi. These are all issues that the Mississippi has in common, and hence it's an organizing team for collaboration and for a national lab to act on.
Do you see us as having the technology, the ability to fix these problems, and what we really need is sort of a logistical infrastructure to implement them? Or do you see a need to really develop highly original techniques, technologies to address this?
I do think that there is likely a role in technology. I don't think that technology is going to be the silver bullet for this. I think a lot of it is thinking outside the box, thinking about combining built and natural infrastructure and rebuilding natural infrastructure in ways that benefit communities and economies, but also help us address some of these challenges simultaneously. The built and natural piece is super important. And I think one thing that we don't know from a lot of very good scholarship and also very good boots on the ground activity work by agencies and by NGOs and by community river organizations is what the ideal sets of interventions are and how much they work. You know, we don't have good data on what is, you know, what are the best sets of natural infrastructure applications that could help remediate some of these long-term issues in the Mississippi. And I think that's the first step. And I don't think that it requires as much technology as it does stakeholdering and just courage to take some chances to see which of these interventions work the best and then implement them at scale.
Can you help us understand a little bit, when we think about a river, we may think about literally the river, right? You know, sort of the heart of the Mississippi as it cuts through the United States. But a river is a lot more than just that, right? Especially a river like the Mississippi.
Right. I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, when we think about a river, we think about the water and the services that water provides. But the landscape, the watershed that surrounds that river is really the pulse and the heartbeat of that river. And anything that you do on that landscape has consequences next door in the river channel, and those consequences can then be propagated downstream as far as, in the case of the Mississippi, the Gulf. And so, you know, what we have to do, I think, in order to make a healthier river is think about that landscape and look at the portfolio of natural assets that we have there and built assets that we have there. Think about what's working, think about what's not working. Where it's not working, we need to try things. We need to rebuild nature, but not necessarily for nature's sake, or for the sake of that particular parcel, but for the sake of the entire system. And I think it's really this idea of building nature rather than restoring it, building it so it has function that serves both people, communities, and economies, but also nature, is core to the idea of what a national lab would do in the Mississippi River.
Because the Gulf Coast is downstream from everything on the Mississippi River, and because the economies of the Gulf Coast are so reliant on the river, do you see those states as being particularly vulnerable if some of these trends that you've seen with the river continue?
Oh, for sure. We know that already. I mean, the newest NOAA forecasts of the dead zone are, you know, proof in the pudding. You can measure that. You can measure the impact on coastal fisheries, on coastal economies, But I think, you know, more broadly, this isn't just a problem for Gulf Coast states. It's a problem that affects the utility of the river for people in states much more distant in the headwaters all the way through the heartland, and also affects our concept of nature. And I think, you know, combining these interventions, which I'm calling them, of natural infrastructure in ways that enhance not just the function of the river, but our portfolio of nature, and sort of modifying our concept of what nature means to us, I think is also important.
Is there a time element here? Do you see there being kind of a concrete point at which it would be, quote unquote, too late to meaningfully change the course that the river's on?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm 50, and I know we can't wait 20 more years because my career will be done by then. But more broadly, I think, you know, we've been waiting and pointing fingers and saying, yeah, we know the problem, but we don't know the solution. And I would answer this question by saying, if we just wait around for the solution, we're not going to be anywhere in 20 years. If we start trying things, we will.
John Szabo is the director of the Bywater Institute at Tulane University in New Orleans. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Stick around for a full morning of Mississippi Radio. Coming up at 9, it's Fix It 101. Then at 10, it's Everyday Tech. And at 11, don't miss Southern Remedy. Find past installments of this and other Think Radio shows online at mpbonline.org. I'm Desiree Frazier. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:30 for the next Mississippi Edition, only on MPB Think Radio. And drink plenty of water. Try and stay cool.